All right, great to have you back with us on this July 4th, and we bring in our dear friend, sinker, slider, bone chip, without Ron Wotus today. He's at the ballpark working, but it is Bill Lasky. Bill, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Marty. Happy 4th of July. We should be waiting for a ball game and waiting for the fireworks after, but of course that's all on hold for this year, and hopefully baseball will continue. It's the second full day, and looking forward to seeing some more reports coming out of there.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you've seen pictures of the ballpark, but heck, look, you've been through spring trainings and as a young man, as just being signed, and then, of course, as a veteran in the major leagues. What do you think when you look at batting cages in left field? You've got batting practice at home plate, batting practice in the outfield. And what's going on? As a professional player, so used to things, what goes through your mind when you see this stuff?
Well, the first thing, I thought it was impressive how they turned the garage into a turf, AstroTurf field in there, because it's big enough for it. Batting cages out in left field under the bleachers. I love the new pitching mounds. I love the new bullpens. I think that's a really cool look for Oracle Park. I just think they used all the different areas where they could bring in baseball and to divide it up more so players could use the facility. And I thought it was a genius move they did, because they made a lot of different places where players could throw on the side, hit in the cages, and it gives them more opportunities to use the players that are in there for that hour or 2 hours they're there.
You know, you always hear the adage, you know, pitchers are ahead of hitters. And, you know, when you get to spring, now here we are. It's July 4th. The games are going to be July 23rd. The schedule is going to come out next week. Giants-Dodgers are going to open up national TV, the second part of a doubleheader on the 23rd of July. Pitchers going to be ahead of the hitters? I mean, dramatically ahead of the hitters?
I don't think so. And it's all going to depend on how many of those pitchers threw on the side, wherever they were, if they were home or they had an indoor cage where they could throw. Right now, you know, 3 weeks to ramp it up, I still think it's going to be all on pitch count. I don't see starters going 5 or 6 innings for a couple times around. I think all the pitching coaches know, just like Kerry said, they have a bullpen. They have a lot of good arms down in that bullpen. And you got some guys that can be long relief. If Rodriguez or Anderson or Suarez jump in that long relief role to go another 2 innings, they have enough means to get into the end of the game with the guys in the middle. So I believe it's going to be pitch count. I believe also what these guys have been doing in this coronavirus layoff, and we'll see who's going to be strong and who has to catch up.
Well, we'll see. At least we've got action, and the pictures we see from the ballpark, Maria Guardado is going to join us about another hour or so, hour and a half, and she is at the ballpark and give us a little more of a bird's eye view for MLB.com. So we'll see how it goes. Did you get to hear Ernie Harwell a little bit before you came on? We did his ode to baseball, and I know he's a former Tiger broadcaster, and I know you're a big Tiger fan.
I grew up with Ernie, so everything that Ernie comes my ears, just like a little kid perks up when I hear that voice. And he was that voice just like Vin Scully was on the West Coast. He was my voice in the Midwest when Tiger games came on. Ernie Harwell was that typical guy. And he had so many different cliches, Marty, and you always think about it, and he's like, he was right. Always good cliches and good. He was one of the better broadcasters in baseball.
Yeah, sweet guy. He was a songwriter, very, very talented, man, and was always so generous with his time. So I'm glad Raf could pull that out of the archives. Other things that we celebrate this weekend, of course, Bill Lasky is with us, and Bill's got a lot ahead of him with the postgame. And, of course, we're going to try to help him out a little bit on the pregame with us as well. But Satchel Paige, and I know this is well before your time, but we do celebrate 42 years old, and look, you're a pitcher in the big leagues. You have to appreciate this. 42 years old, he finally gets a shot with a pennant-winning team, a World Series, going to be a World Series championship team in Cleveland. 42, Bill, in 1948, Satchel Paige finally gets his shot.
Yeah, persistence right off the bat. He was such a glamorous man in baseball when you start talking about the Negro Leagues and what he did for baseball. And like you said, 42 years old, a 2-time All-Star. He was inducted in the Hall of Fame also just a flamboyant kind of pitcher with a dynamic arm. And he pitched very well for Cleveland, and as you say, a World Series champion in 1948. But just that kind of guy that we talk about, because the Negro Leagues just celebrated 100 years, and he's that guy. I remember Satchel Paige coming up, knowing him and Jackie Robinson and all the fellow black athletes that really pushed that color barrier through baseball. And he was definitely that guy that I remember as a pitcher.
Well, one thing I was thinking about, Larry Doby, of course, we celebrate that. His debut in the American League is tomorrow of 1947, just a few months after Jackie Robinson. And he doesn't, Larry doesn't get much due, and he was in a much, much tougher situation there. But did you ever do any research into Larry Doby, a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, you know, those are back in my Indian days. You know, I was only, you know, from Toledo to Cleveland, it was only a couple hours. So I did follow a lot of the Indians, too. And Larry Doby was that exact guy. The first black athlete in American League, which I didn't know. And then I started looking him up the other day. And you know, he was just sensational to the game, too. A three-time player in high school, played football, basketball, and baseball. More of a basketball player. He really enjoyed basketball. But as you said earlier, you know, what a young age coming into the big leagues as a second baseman. And again, playing for the Cleveland Indians, which nobody even wanted him to be part of the team. But he was such a good player. He was a good batter, a good hitter. And he ended up being that other name, just like Jackie Robinson did.
Whoop, where'd Bill go? Did we lose Bill there?
You're no, there. I'm here. Did you catch that?
Yeah. No, finish up. You just said something about finishing up with Larry.
Yeah, it was really just Larry Doby jumping into that game and playing regularly. And a young player at 17 years old, he got drafted and ended up going to World War, I think it was one or two. And just the perception of him coming back and playing professional baseball and one of the very good second basemen. Larry was a very good player.
Yeah, amazing. So I'm glad we could touch on that. All right, Joe Maddon today said, you know, this is going to be weird, but believe me, I think we're going to go back to more fundamental baseball. I can't believe it until I see it, to tell you the truth, because, look, you've been analyzing it on Comcast and on KNBR for a few years now. But Joe Maddon says, no, we're going to go back to stealing some bases, bunting, and fundamental baseball. Do you believe it?
No, I don't, because I thought that era was over. But again, you know, he might be bringing something back up just to put in other people's minds. And you always do that in the media. You bring that up. Okay, are they going to bunt in this situation? The hit and run, we haven't seen that in years. I would love to see it back in the game. I think that's a big part of the game. We talk about all the weeks we talk with Ron, all the different things that have changed different eras of baseball when we played compared to how they are now. And I would love to see the bunt, sacrifice bunt coming over, but I think all three of us touched on that because the designated hitter now is in the lineup every day. So, again, what do you have in that designated hitter? Is it power? Is it a batting average? We'll see what part of the order the Giants will put their DH in and see if that all comes back in transition from when we played. But I just don't see it happening, Marty. And until they do it, I'll be in belief.
Yeah, me too. And I think you bring up a great point about the DH being there. It just changes the game. You don't have to play for a run unless it's the top of the ninth or bottom of the ninth. And, you know, you want to get that guy at the scoring position. But even then, they don't like to give up outs. They just don't like to do it. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see where all that goes. That is a part of baseball. I wish Joe Maddon was right. But let's see what he says and what he actually does when it comes to the game. Hey, we celebrate July 4th, and it's the no-hitter that Dave Righetti threw. And you know Righetti so well, and you were actually pitching in the big leagues in 84. He pitched on July 4th and then no-hit the Red Sox and that last out of Wade Boggs. Wade Boggs, come on, one of the great contact hitters of all time, misses the third strike by about 3 feet. A great slider from Righetti. You ever talk to Dave about that game or your thoughts about Righetti and the no-hitter?
I have many times, and he said he was just on that day. You know, if you look, he said it was really humid in New York that day. You could see it in his uniform, you know, the socks all dirty from the perspiration that he had, and you could just see the uniform color of the jersey And you can always see the humidity when you see those Midwest games, East Coast games in July. July 4th is one of those days, humid as hell in New York. But, boy, did he throw a gem. You know, I kind of looked it up a little bit as we were talking here. 9 innings, 4 walks, 9 Ks. He only faced 29 hitters. And I looked at the box score, and Wade Boggs, 0 for 4. Jerry Remy, 0 for 4. Dwight Evans, 0 for 3. Jim Rice was 0 for 1. He walked Jim Rice twice. But that lineup was pretty good. The Red Sox threw at him, and, of course, all the right-handers against Rigetti being the lefty. But he was on fire that day. He had that nasty slider, and that was one big pitch he got a lot of people out on or got him to roll over on it. So, you know, I always tip my hat to great days, and there's no doubt July 4th is Dave Rigetti's no-hitter for the Yankees.
Yeah, always remember George Steinbrenner's birthday. It was a big deal, and Rigetti, he always says around July 4th, people start calling him. So remember, Woe told us that when we talked about Rigetti when he was one of our spotlight coaches. Hey,
One of the things, Marty, that was the first no-hitter since Don Larson's no-hitter perfect game in 1956. I was just looking at that. And that's a long ways when you think about it. Don Larson in the World Series of 56 and Rigetti came back, and that's very similar to how Jonathan Sanchez, when he pitched his first no-hitter for the Giants.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's funny. I was seeing what did I see the other day? I think it was the last grand slam by a Giant pitcher. I mean, remember we did the show on Sean Estes. Remember we did something about that? And you had to go back, seriously, to like 1948 or something ridiculous for the last Giant pitcher to hit a grand slam. So, yeah, so Rigetti did break the streak for the New York Yankees and getting the no-hitter. A couple of things. One, Samardzija yesterday, and I'm interested in your reaction to this, said, hey, there will be fans. He was bitter. No other way to say it. You know, there will be fans at the games. The owners want it, and the owners could care less. You know, they're safe. We're not, blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. What do you think?
There's no doubt he was bitter. I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more out of Players Association as well as some of the players from different teams. We really haven't heard a lot of the players speak up yet. That was really the first one. And I thought he was right to the point. He's like, you know, we are going against the owners. The owners have the money. They're going to get their money. They will allow fans in this ballpark sooner or later, and they're going to have the clause. If you catch coronavirus at the ballpark, that's on your back. And I think players and are looking up to there. They're, you know, of course, Marty, you and I will have our cutouts up there. I got one also from KBR, so maybe we'll be sitting together up in the stands, Marty, with our cutouts.
I thought that's as close as I want to get.
me too. I have no desire to go to the ballpark, Marty. I have no desire.
No, you know, but, you know, look, you're going to do a post game, and I'm going to do a pregame, and we will watch the game. And, you know, for you, I guess we'll hear the rap, you know, John and those guys will do it. And, you know, they do a great job of summarizing the game. But you've got to do a post game show and not be at the ballpark. That's a challenge for you.
It will be, no doubt about it. And, you know, you've done many times where you are at KNBR doing the post-game watching the game, too. And I just see a lot of different things in the game, just like we all do. And I'm anxious to hear the fans. I'm anxious to get those call-ins at the end and hear what their thoughts are, because they're going to be watching the games on TV as we do. So it's going to be interesting to hear how they think of the game, too. And it looks like there's no interviews anymore in the clubhouse. They closed the clubhouse 45 minutes after the game. They went to players out. So all the interviews now will be through Zoom. You and I are both attached to those interviews. So I'll be watching some of those, too, and hearing some insights from some of the players who made the good play or not. Those are all things that I can add to the show once the show starts after the wrap. And very much excited to do that, jumping on your pregame a few times and as well as you joining me on some post games and kick this off and do it the right way. And I'm excited that baseball is back.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Hey, Bruce Jenkins wrote an article this week. And look, you know, we love to tap into your knowledge being the former pitcher, and you had a nice major league career. So many big games you pitched for the Giants. But the media will not be in the clubhouse. And, you know, as Bruce said, it turned into in the last few years, you'd go in the clubhouse from 3:30 to 4:30, and you'd end up talking. I mean, you, meaning me collectively, I'd be talking to you, or I'd be talking to Bruce Jenkins or John Shea or Henry Shulman, and maybe one or two players would filter in to talk. And now with COVID, the media will not be in the locker room. And look, you're a former player. Did the media bug you? Or are you? How do you feel about that? Because Bruce implied.
I really didn't. It didn't bother me. I talked to Lowell Cohn. I talked to mostly all of them. And I never had a problem with them. Of course, the tough questions are always when you had a bad game, when you stood up there and you took some of the heat they took, they gave you. But at that time, you're in the big leagues. You have to take the good as well as the bad. I didn't have a problem with them. Some guys just shut them off. You know, you had certain players that said, no, I'm not talking to any media before the game. I'll give you a few, you know, questions at the end of the game. But that's changed now. You know, the social media is just take the interviews and they take them to a whole nother plateau. And, of course, all the writers have Twitter and all the different social medias to throw their article out and things of that magnitude. That's what's going to be tough for them. To get those one-on-one interviews and a little bit more insight into what they were doing while they were home or under quarantine. So I think that's going to be a real tough task for some of these guys like Andrew Baggerly and John Shea, just the ones with Henry Schumann. They're going to be tough trying to get interviews, and they're just going to have to figure out a way to do it, either through a Zoom interview or somehow some way to do one-on-one interviews, and that's going to be interesting to see how they move forward with that.
Well, when you were a player, did you ever hide from the media?
No, I really didn't. I was, you know, you were always angry after you took the loss and you just stand there and give you the one-sentence answers because you just didn't really want to delve into what you just got as a pitcher, you know, giving up 3-4 runs in the first three innings. That's not what you really wanted to do, but you had to answer it. And I never hid that. I never did. And even now in the media like you and I are, you know, I take the questions when I ask people just the way I would have taken them if I was on the other side. So I do create questions in a different manner from a player to a player. And I think that's why sometimes I get some of the good answers out of these players. And I think that's the plus that any ex-player in media now can cherish when you start talking to some of these guys.
Well, you got to find them first. That'll be the problem. That's going to be interesting. Bruce wrote a very interesting article. He got a lot of comments and mostly positive comments about how it will change. Look, when you traveled, I assume the writers probably traveled with you back in the 80s, right?
They did. They went right on the same plane with us. They sat in the back with us, and you conversed with them just like a normal person. Now they don't do that at all. That happened many years ago.
But we used to travel and go to hotels together, have lunch with them. I mean, that's the relationship we had back then. And, you know, you always had that one line that some players didn't want to even be around them. Some players would say, go in front of the plane where you belong. But, you know, that's every folk's different. Every person's different how you handle the media.
Well, different world now, that's for sure. And as Bruce said, I don't think we're going to go backwards. I think they're going to make the clubhouse private. And Zoom is going to be the new normal.
It's going to be
the new normal, as long as we don't have to do shows on Zoom. One last thing for you, a couple of anniversaries. One, the Lou Gehrig speech. You've been around baseball a long time. Is that speech comparable in anything that you've heard? You must have been around retirements and special moments at the ballpark.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig, the luckiest man in the world, the old iron horse. Boy, I never forget that one. It still gives me chills when you see it because he was on the field, and he was such a private man too. But the one that comes to me was Bruce Bochy when he retired. That speech was to the top of my mind, and just the way he kept his composure, and he talked about everybody on that field, and he didn't miss one soul. And I thought that was one of the classiest speeches I've heard in the modern, you know, era. Hunter Pence made a good one, and he's back already, so we got to push that one aside. He might have another one for us coming down the road. But I thought Bruce Bochy was elegant in every which way, with no paper, with notes. He spoke right from his heart. And just came out, and the words were just so precious. And I would have to throw Bruce Bochy on my list as one of the top, final words, or would you say final thing? What about you? What would you think, Marty?
Well, I thought that maybe the Ted Williams speech at the Hall of Fame, acknowledging the African-American black players who were never given their due And it was only because of Williams' speech, I think, that spurred the Hall of Fame to create this special section for honoring players from the Negro Leagues. And then, of course, it was expanded into just, you know, Satchel Paige and others just being Hall of Famers. It wasn't like a special deal anymore. But I thought Ted Williams got
They were all good. They were all momentum speeches. They were all the speeches that if you don't ever hear them go on any kind of baseball plateau and listen to them, the younger fans out there that may not even know who Lou Gehrig and Ted Williams are, go back and listen to those because you can hear their heartbeat through their voice. And those speeches is ringing my head every time.
Yeah, special. Hey, enjoy the 4th. Take care of yourself. We're back nighttime next week, so maybe we'll have the professor back with us next week. But, yeah, believe me, get ready because barring anything crazy happening, we will have baseball July 23rd.
Well, Marty, get out of there and have a nice hot dog or a burger and enjoy 4th of July.
All right. Be careful. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Thanks, Marty.
All right, that is Bill Lasky. We're going to be doing a lot with him this year.